from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of January 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Stephen Platt will join us to take a look at the agricultural energies. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast, too. That with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, we'll check in on Illinois beef and what's been happening in southern Illinois as it relates to a disease called anaplasmosis. And we'll do all of that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I hear the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. The March corn opinion 3/4 higher, $3.49. The May at $3.57 and a quarter, up 1 3/4. July corn 3.65 and a half opinion 3/4 higher. September up 1 3/4. And December contract for next year, your new crop at 3.82 and a half, up 1 1/2. And the March of 2018 at 3.92, up 1 1/2 cents as well. January beans down 2 1/2 today at $9.55 3/4. The March 3 lower at 9.63 3/4. May down 3 at 9.74 1/2. July soybeans 9.83 3/4, 3 1/2 lower. In November at 9.82 3/4, down 1. Next year's January at $9.90 3/4. That's for 2018, down a penny. January bean oil 12 cents lower at 33.55. The bean meal at 314.50, rather, down $3 even. Wheat futures soft red, and nearby March at 4.32 at a quarter, up 4 1/2 cents. May at 4.45 at a quarter, 4 3/4 cents higher. And the hard red July at 4.68 finished 5 1/2 cents higher. Here's what the livestock finished like for in the day in Chicago. February contract at $117.67 1/2 cents for the live cattle, up 45 cents. April futures at 119.52 and a half, 22 and a half higher. January feeders at $145.47 1/2 cents, down 97 1/2. However, the March were up 82 1/2 at 142.75. And the lean hogs February contract up 20 cents. They finished $73.17 1/2. The April at $76.77 1/2 cents, finished 2 1/2 cents lower. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can find most, if not all, of our agricultural programming to listen to on demand anytime you would like. Again, the address, willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what some of the outside markets are trading like at this hour. February crude oil, $62.99 a barrel, $1.26 higher. Ethanol futures up 2 1/10 cents at $1.32 6/10 per gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.06 7/10 is 2 2/10 cents higher. Gasoline on the wholesale price at $1.83 8/10 is up 4 6/10. And natural gas for the day at $2.91 7/10 is up 8 2/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 25,386. That's 136 points higher. The U.S. dollar trading 92.225 is up 0.125. And the gold futures for the day at $1,315.60, down $4.80. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Areas of drizzle after midnight. Some dense fog, otherwise cloudy. A low of 33 tonight. Southeast winds at 7 to 10. Patchy drizzle before noon tomorrow on Wednesday. Widespread dense fog, otherwise cloudy. And a high of 51. South winds at 10 to 16. Gusting to 28. And that'll bring us a 40% chance of showers after midnight on Wednesday evening, with areas of dense fog again, otherwise cloudy, and a low of 48. South winds at 16 miles an hour, gusting to 26. On Thursday, showers are likely. It'll be cloudy. We'll go to about 57 degrees. That south wind will remain with us at 11 to 18. And we'll turn to the west in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 28. Chance of rainfall on Thursday set at 70%. We might get between 1/10 and 1/4 inch on that day. And then on Thursday evening, rain, freezing rain, sleet, possibly mixed with snow before 2 a.m., then snow likely possibly mixed with rain and freezing rain between 2 and 4, and then snow after 4 a.m., a low of about 24 degrees. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities. He's out of Newmarket, Indiana. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so let's talk a little bit about this marketplace in general. Not much happened really today, but the big news will come on Friday when USDA releases its reports. Three of them are due out, WASDE, crop production, and the grain stocks numbers. Which figures will you be watching with most intent?
Well, I think the grain stocks numbers are going to be telling us an awful lot to see what sort of disappearance we saw as far as feed usage, because that's going to be the big one as far as ethanol and feed usage. But, of course, the WASDE and whether they cut the exports farther on down the road is going to be the next one we look at, because that would be, you know, more carryout, meaning more grain just hanging over our heads. If we could get that number down, that would be very helpful.
Is the trade expecting this to happen?
No, the trade's expecting to see a little bit of cut in our export numbers, a little bit of increase in our carryout. And, you know, on Thursday, when we should see some numbers out of South America, maybe a little more Argentina numbers a little bit, but I think they're going to be sort of a scratch is what we look at. But all in all, the funds are very, very short, you know, and they're playing the side that they think the government will raise the carryout.
Hey, you're there at a crop insurance meeting today. I'm wondering what the reaction was to President Donald Trump's address to the AFBF yesterday. He made sure to mention crop insurance as something he wanted in the Farm Bill, and that's a bit of a change.
Yeah, that sure is. And yes, it was a very positive attitude towards that. We like what he's talking about. There was talk that there might be some people or agencies of the government that get trimmed back a little bit and keep it in the hands of crop insurance agents rather and insurance companies rather than the FSA maybe take over some things and have the government paying for more things than they need to. So we like that attitude, and we like the attitude that we're going to keep some crop insurance out here for at least the next few years for these farmers.
When you look into the next year, and based on what you're hearing from the folks that you're dealing with today at the meeting, and I take it it's crop insurance agents, are they feeling better or worse about American agriculture going forward?
Well, it's going to be a rough year on everybody in agriculture this year, Todd. Unless we see some swan fly, you know, come on swimming into this picture, well, we've got some pretty bleak you know, outlooks as far as income in agriculture this year. So, you know, a little bit of just tentativeness, but all in all, on a year like this year, it's when they really need the crop insurance to be able to do their marketing with the crop insurance backup, and also in case things would really go bad. The other thing is, remember, we've got the harvest price, and if we could actually get a good rally, it could really up their coverage for the year.
Now let's come back to what producers have or been thinking about doing here in the month of January. Generally, they do move corn, although I think that's been pretty limited to this point. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Well, not in my area, Todd. Over here, last week we had Cargill pushing their bid. They were paying 10 over for corn. So we saw a lot of farmers that were willing to move some corn at that price, you know, is to get a little cash flow for right now. So we have seen some corn move in our area, but as we get away from the areas of the ethanol plants, corn moves been very slow.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Yesterday afternoon, President Donald Trump addressed the 99th American Farm Bureau Federation annual convention, speaking on tax cuts and regulatory reform, along with a brief mention of the North American Free Trade Agreement and the Farm Bill, telling Farm Bureau members he supports passage of an on-time Farm Bill that includes crop insurance. Trump used the appearance to sign two presidential orders expanding access to broadband internet in rural America, but his Farm Bureau members spent part of the convention sporting "I support NAFTA" buttons. Trump made a small mention of NAFTA, saying his administration is working to renegotiate NAFTA to make the agreement better for agriculture.
We're reviewing all of our trade agreements to make sure that they are fair and reciprocal. Reciprocal, so important. On NAFTA, I am working very hard to get a better deal for our country and for our farmers and for our manufacturers. It's under negotiation as we speak.
Trump touted the just-passed tax reform and the relief he says it will bring to farmers and ranchers. He pointed to the estate tax changes, doubling the exemption that he says will help keep farms in the family.
And from now on, most family farms and small business owners will be spared. And you're going to be spared, and it really is the word punishment, of the deeply unfair estate tax known as the death tax, so you can keep your farms in the family.
On his work reducing federal regulations, the president told Farm Bureau members that the administration is working to end the regulatory assault on the farmer's way of life.
For years, many of you have endured burdensome fines, inspections, paperwork, and relentless intrusion from an army of regulators at the EPA, the FDA, and countless other federal agencies. Is that right, by the way? That's why I'm truly proud to report that within our first 11 months, my administration has canceled or delayed over 1,500 planned regulatory actions or assaults, more than any president in the history of the United States.
Mr. Trump made statements on how he hoped to bring a better transportation system to rural America and on the fight against the opioid epidemic, commenting as well on building the wall. However, Trump met a mixed crowd reaction on that one.
We are going to end chain migration. We are going to end the lottery system. And we are going to build the wall.
Mr. Trump called farmers the basis of society and truly friends of liberty, concluding his speech saying, "Farm country is God's country." George H.W. Bush, by the way, was the last president to address the AFBF annual convention in 1992 in Kansas City, and before that, in 1990 in Orlando. In today's agricultural news, during the 99th Annual American Farm Bureau Federation Convention, AFBF President Zippy Duvall said he has had no conversations with the Trump administration or Secretary Perdue about a plan B for the North American Free Trade Agreement.
There has been no communication between me and the Secretary of Agriculture about there being a plan B or something that's there. My discussions with the Secretary is that this trade treaty is going to be negotiated and our farmers and ranchers are going to be okay in the end. And I don't know about y'all, but I have a lot of faith in Secretary Sonny Perdue.
Duvall noted Farm Bureau has some concern that the administration is focusing on current trade agreements and not opening up new markets for farmers with new trade agreements.
We're ready to get this done, get past it, so that we can move forward on new bilaterals or multilateral trade treaties, however this president wants to do that. Most of the population in this world does live outside our country, and we need the opportunity to sell those people, and we're really ready to work with him to get that done.
President Donald Trump spoke at the convention Monday, focusing on regulations and taxes. Meanwhile, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, appearing before Trump during the event's closing session, addressed NAFTA, expressing faith that a new agreement will be reached.
I want you to know that I have great faith in President Trump's skills as a negotiator, and I'm quite confident that he will strike the best deal possible for the United States and that we will have a fair NAFTA agreement that works well for our economy, including the agricultural sector.
Perdue said it is time negotiators from Canada step up and engage in meaningful conversation regarding dairy and poultry tariffs to get closer to finishing the negotiations. The secretary also presented the findings of the Interagency Task Force on Agriculture and Rural Prosperity to the president during a ceremony at the AFBF convention. Back in April, Trump signed an executive order establishing the task force. Perdue served as the chair of the task force, which came up with over 100 recommendations to help improve life in rural America. The recommendations all centered around five areas, including e-connectivity, quality of life, rural workforce, technology, and economic development. Purdue says while the task force worked tirelessly to identify solutions to the problems plaguing rural communities, he says there's more work ahead. He adds that under President Trump's leadership and the work of the task force, it can be turned around so rural prosperity is restored once and for all. And finally today, as demand for ethanol has increased, the number of ethanol plants in the United States has quadrupled. A USDA report says the growth in the number of ethanol plants has been driven by the Renewable Fuels Standard, which was first enacted in 2005. The initial increase in plant numbers after 2005 led to some plants not producing at their full potential because supply grew faster than demand. However, since 2011, the number of plants has remained steady, allowing production numbers to increase as plants utilize their maximum production capacity. As of last year, the USDA report says the plants have been operating at 97% capacity. That translates into more than 15 billion gallons of ethanol production. Such a high number would normally mean demand for more new plants. However, the limitation on the amount of ethanol that can be blended with a gasoline in existing vehicles is 10%. When you add in lower gasoline consumption because of greater vehicle efficiency and fewer miles driven, domestic demand for ethanol is further limited in expansion ability. Thanks to these limitations, additional domestic production is intended for the export market. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason, where researchers at the University of Illinois are working with beef cattle producers in the southern third of the state to determine the prevalence of a disease that causes cows to become listless and sometimes die. A cattle disease called anaplasmosis has been ramping up in the southern part of Illinois, or at least that's the way it appears. In short, it causes severe anemia. Well, Illinois Extension's Teresa Steckler, with funding from the Illinois Beef Association, has been pulling blood samples from herds in the area. She's trying to determine if the strain of anaplasmosis is one called Mississippi that can be controlled by a vaccine, or if it's something else.
I'm just trying to see, with the movement of cattle throughout the United States, do we have a new strain? Is there a new agent that's transmitting disease, or is it still just the tick that's causing the transmission? Which is that linked to our deer population? Is that linked to some other population where the ticks may feast on and then move on to the cattle? Is that related to the increase, and the guys are reporting to me, an increase in the big black horse flies?
Cattlemen like Loy Holselton in southern Illinois don't think there's been an increase in the tick population, but say the number of black horse flies, well, that's been on the upswing. Holselton's a vet and had Illinois pull samples from his herd of about 50. He says herd health is something that takes constant attention, even when the signs are actually there.
When they lose one head, they oftentimes throw that up to just chance, when it could be the sign of something more sinister.
Something like a blood parasite that causes anaplasmosis, something the University of Illinois is working to prevent through research and education. For Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at the agricultural energies. Hi, Stephen. How are you today?
Great, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very, very well. Hey, so let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the marketplace. Crude oil has gotten into that $60 range. We've gotten the Dow over 25,000 points. How do you see it all working out?
Well, they've all basically moved in sync. And that's the way we've seen the world economy been moving as well. I certainly think the tax cut and some of the moves in the U.S. has not only affected sentiment here, but also overseas as well. And us being in sync, I think, has certainly helped provide the basis for a bullish tone to a lot of markets, at least on the industrial side, particularly the crude, heating oil, and even gasoline. We've seen the crude move up as much as 9%. The gasoline has moved up 10% over the past month, and heating oil up over 7%. Certainly, there's been a lot of factors that we've talked about in the past that have also contributed to the movement other than economic activity. And certainly, there's still a lot of questions on whether the move will be able to be sustained. But on the bullish side, certainly has been the high compliance by OPEC members. We've seen compliance at over 125% of what they had committed back in November of last year, with Saudi Arabia and Venezuela showing some of the largest shortfalls. Although the curtailment in Venezuela is due to structural problems due to a lack of investment and technical flight, Saudi Arabia is intentionally keeping their production low to help, I think, the valuation of their IPO with respect to Aramco. You've also seen certainly the unrest in Iran peak people's interest, and also talk of U.S. abandoning nuclear deal as forcing some buying interest as well. I think there is some room for caution here. Certainly, the hedge funds are net long this market and have been. Their position is at a record high. Short positions of the hedge funds are close to their lowest they've been since really the price slump started in 2014. You also have the prospective expansion in production by not only the U.S., where we'll see record high production being reached this coming year, but also in Libya and Nigeria, who are pretty much exempt from the pact. So at these levels, I have to be somewhat cautious. I'm not a believer from here, at least for now. Certainly, though, the momentum has been to the upside. And I do think, though, the market could be due for some kind of shakeout, which could provide the basis for maybe as much as a $4 to $5 break.
I suppose that the other side of this coin is that this move has been counter-seasonal and that this marketplace tends to be quite seasonal, so there should be some pressure there somewhere.
And that is, first, in, you know, as we move into the end of the first quarter into the second, you'll start to see some seasonal maintenance go on as they move toward gasoline production for the summer. That does slow the refineries down and slow consumption down as well. And there is the estimates by the International Energy Agency, suggesting that the supply-demand balance will be pretty much even as we move into the second quarter. And that could help take some of the pressure off. I do expect the U.S. Inventory levels start to pick up after falling sharply here over the past quarter. And that should also probably weigh on values as well.
Hey, Steve, we look forward to talking with you again next month. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That, of course, is Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services.
It's National Apricot Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1788, Connecticut became the fifth state in the Union. The tiny state suffered under the Articles of Confederation. Faced with heavy import duties to New York, Connecticut found it difficult to rebuild its economy after the war. In 1843, William Headley died, an English coal mine manager. He was a pioneer in the building and design of steam locomotives that featured simple friction between wheels and rails instead of geared track. He patented his idea on March 13th of 1813, and later that year, his locomotive, Puffing Billy, began to pull coal on a 5-mile line. The engine remained in service till 1864. In 1858, Elizabeth Gertrude Knight Britton was born, an American botanist. Her efforts were a major factor in the establishment of the New York Botanical Gardens. In 1914, Henry Ford established the unheard-of sum of $5 a day minimum wage in his factories. The wage at the time was just $2.34 for a 9-hour shift. Ford not only doubled the wage, he cut an hour off the workday. And in 1992, Hans Jenny died, a Swiss agricultural chemist. He developed numerical functions to describe soil in terms of 5 interacting factors: climate, organisms, relief, parent material, and time. His book, Factors of Soil Formation, published in 1941, is a classic. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is now here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at what's been happening across the globe. Let's start, Don, in Argentina. What's their weather look like today?
Well, over the last week or so, there's been a little bit of rain down there, and soil moisture profiles have gotten a little bit better. We still have a lot of dry pockets in Argentina. Precipitation-wise, over the next week or so, there is going to be some activity down there. It's going to be focusing on the central and northern growing areas and the western growing areas of Argentina. In the southern areas, a little bit drier. So the overall forecast for the next week is for at or slightly below average precipitation totals, but some rain.
And if you move further to the north, the Brazilian soybean crop looks like it's in pretty good shape, though I take it they're delayed enough that corn planting is behind there for the second crop or safrinha corn.
Yeah, the conditions, soil moisture profiles and everything look really good, and the prospects here for the next week or so in Brazil in terms of precipitation looks good. Nothing excessive. There might be a few pockets where rain's a little heavier in the southwest areas of Brazil that may cause a few more delays, but overall, things are looking good.
And then come here to the United States, where finally we've come out of the desperately cold times, at least in our part of the world, in the Midwest. What do you see for this week and next week and maybe some of the plain states where it's been really, really dry?
Well, I'll tell you, for anybody that is happy about the relief from the cold, that's good news. The bad news is the cold's coming right back on in. We are going to see a rather significant weather system come in. There's actually two. One will be diving south into the area, coming out of the Rockies, bringing some colder temperatures and a little bit of rain and snow as we get to Thursday night and Friday. Late in the day, Thursday into Friday, there'll be some rain and some snow and some colder temperatures. And then another system comes in on the backside of it as we get into late Friday into Saturday. That will bring snow to many areas of the Midwest, especially the eastern Corn Belt and the southeastern Great Lakes. And there's going to be some very cold air settling in again. So it's going to come right back on in.
And then if you look further out from that, do we stay cold or do we warm back up at the end of the month?
Well, I tell you, I think we will probably be more often than not colder than normal right up into the end of January. Now, that doesn't negate the fact that there probably will be some moderation in temperatures at times. But right now, there's plenty of cold air over central Canada, plenty of opportunities for it to come on in. So we're going to be making up some ground for the warmer conditions we had this fall. Is the rest of January, more often than not, is going to be cold.
What are snowpack conditions like for Wyoming and then into the Dakotas and maybe helping to alleviate some of the drought they've been suffering through since October?
The northern Rockies and the Pacific Northwest Mountains doing good with snowpack. But you get into the central and southern Rockies, you get into Colorado, you get into southern Wyoming, you get into Utah, New Mexico, Arizona. Those are the snowpacks right now that are suffering. Something you would expect in a moderate La Nina that we're in right now. So the northern areas favor the most. The central and southern Rockies need some snow, as those snowpacks are a good 20 to 25% below normal.
Hey, Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. And that wraps it up for the day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.